Let's go. Welcome to Underdog Stuff, the voice of the underdog. You know what we do every week here, exploring how underdogs keep our swagger in today's society and culture. We get personal here about the news and the culture from all the angles. Every episode of Underdog Stuff includes the unavoidable news, the under of the week, and the underdog spotlight segment. I like to say it's a big scoop of pop culture politics topped with swagger back commandments. And to take you on that journey every week, you have your host, Gregory Neesmith, underdog advocate, certified coach, published author, and out here just trying to figure out how underdogs get access to the people and resources we need on our come ups and our comebacks. With that, it's time to get ready for episode 94, and it's called Uncertainty, and Maybe Yoga Will Help. Uncertainty, and Maybe Yoga Will Help. It might sound like an obscure title, but I guarantee it'll make sense. And I'll give you a little hint why it'll make some sense, because we have a special guest coming through today. Two special guests, actually. Near the end of the show, when we get to the underdog spotlight, we have special guests, Tressa Fulton and Courtney Liddell, who stopped by to talk about the benefits of yoga and how they combine jazz and yoga in their monthly Move and Groove yoga event in Harlem. Tressa Fulton is an agency relations manager with New York City's Department of Information, Technology, and Telecommunications. Say that quickly over and over again. Long title. She's doing her thing in the world. And Courtney Liddell is a certified yoga instructor. And together they are a team that brings us Move and Groove yoga monthly event in Harlem. We'll talk more about that later in the show. With that, let's get into it. With that, though, some unavoidable news. While it's all great that we're out here as underdogs, getting our swagger back, rediscovering our special stuff, our come-ups, comebacks, it's always good to still stay up on things, stay up on what's going on in the world. And for those of you who were around last week on episode 93, we talked about glass cliffs, glass ceilings, and telling your story. And we had the accomplished Minda Hartz come through and talk about some of the stuff she's doing for women of color in the world, especially in the workplace. And there was a clip I wanted to play last week that I got so caught up in the moment, I didn't get to play it. And it was a clip by Viola Davis, who I think in just a few minutes kind of brought to life what it's like to sometimes be a person of color, and specifically in her case, a woman of color, and talking about what, you know, what could make things better, or what's the difference between her and some of her white counterparts in Hollywood. And Viola Davis talks about the only difference sometimes is opportunity. And this is the clip I wanted to play of Viola from a speech she gave at the Emmys a few years ago that I didn't play last week, but I want to play it this week because I think it really sums up some of the conversation from last week, and it'll actually relate to some of the unavoidable news this week. Here's Viola Davis.
In my mind, I see a line. And over that line, I see green fields and lovely flowers and beautiful white women with their arms stretched out to me over that line. But I can't seem to get there no how. I can't seem to get over that line. That was Harriet Tubman in the 1800s. And let me tell you something. The only thing that separates women of color from anyone else is opportunity. You cannot win an Emmy for roles that are simply not there. So here's to all the writers, the awesome people that are Ben Sherwood, Paul Lee, Peter Nowak, Shonda Rhimes, people who have redefined what it means to be beautiful, to be sexy, to be a leading woman, to be black. And to the Taraji P. Hensons, the Kerry Washingtons, the Halle Berrys, the Nicole Beharis, the Megan Goods, to Gabrielle Union, thank you for taking us over that line. Thank you. for the Television Academy. Thank you.
That's Viola Davis from the Emmys from a few years ago. And that speech will never get old to me. But I do wish for a day that the speech becomes outdated. And we can only hope that that happens sooner rather than later. And then you're like, well, why am I bringing up Viola Davis from a few years ago, even though we talked about some related topics just a week ago? Well, it's because in one of the more underreported stories of the week, Viola was back out here talking that talk and pushing the movement. And she was actually honored this past week at the Hollywood Reporter's 2018 Woman in Entertainment Power 100. And she was able to talk about the progress, talk about the fight, and talk about that she wants to be a leader in the movement of making sure underdogs, especially women of color in Hollywood, go from being underdogs to being on top. And this was just a snippet of her speech from this week.
Because let me tell you something. You do not know, you do not have to know what is in the hearts of people to be a leader. But by God, you have to know what is in the heart of the leader. And what is in my heart is I cannot lead with bull. Okay, I cannot lead with lying. I cannot lead with the lying about what the road is out there. And when I started my production company with my husband, Juvie Productions, we started it because I got tired of always celebrating movies that didn't have me in it. And when I said didn't have me in it, I don't mean me, Viola, I mean me as a Black woman.
Tell them, Viola, with that, you know, how I feel about this whole subject, representation matters. And while when it comes to the arts and literature and things like that, it's cool for us to get what's called the window. It's good for me to see the world through the eyes of other people, people who don't look like me, who don't sound like me, who don't have my same background. That's the window, and that has its place. But it's also good in our literature and our arts to have something called the mirror, where we see a reflection of ourselves. And that's all Viola's talking about. Want to have that reflection going on. And also it means some jobs and making stuff happen and livelihood and telling a different narrative and story about us. So it all works together. It's all a big deal. Shout out to Viola Davis, who continues to push and lead by example. Also, speaking of unavoidable news, Michelle Obama, talking about representation and mirrors, she out here still selling books. Sold a lot of books when she dropped her book Becoming, and she's still selling a lot of books even this week too. Also in the news, Kevin Hart from my hometown of Philly. He was hosting the Oscars, not hosting the Oscars, hosting the Oscars, not hosting the Oscars, hosting the Oscars. Now he's not hosting the Oscars. We'll continue to see how that story unfolds. But as of right now, he's not hosting the Oscars. Also, Bush 41 passed away. There was a funeral this past week. I didn't cover it last week. I'm not going to really cover it this week. But it did get me to thinking about, as underdogs, and just in general, how do we deal with people when they pass away, especially when it's someone, not just a public figure, but in our personal lives, when someone passes away who has, let's just call it a complicated history, maybe a complicated history with you personally. Do we only say good things about people when they pass? Are we able to tell their full story? If we don't have anything good to say, should we not say nothing at all? Whether it was the passing of John McCain or the passing of George Bush, it did give me the thinking that two people who, at least politically, seem to be at odds at times with helping underdogs who are specifically Black folks at times, they have a, you know, checkered past, so to speak, with some of their policies and ideologies. Do we just forget all that when they pass? Is it on the table to talk about it? I'm not sure. I think it's a worthwhile segment, not because to me it's about Bush 41, but I think it's a worthwhile topic because in our personal lives, I know my personal lives, you might all have that uncle who you kind of love him, but also maybe you kind of hate him because of the history you have with him, or that aunt, or your mom, or your parents, or your good friends, that they've done some things to you that don't sit well with you. How do you remember them when that day comes that they may and do unfortunately pass. Something for a later show, but the Bush 41 stuff has me thinking about that. Also, why is he still Bush 43 still handing candy to Michelle? As a side note, I don't understand it. I mean, there's still a lot of living presidents, which means unfortunately there's gonna be a lot of funerals still to come. Are he gonna just keep giving candy to Michelle every time? Anyway, all right. With that, a couple weeks ago, I'm sure you guys thought that I was crazy that I brought up who are your top five people most likely to be president in 2020. You're like, Gregory, it's December. It's 2018. Election's not till 2020. Why are you talking about it? Why are you talking about who's gonna be president? It's not time yet. And sure enough, this week, not only is it time, people out here starting to make their case like this.
Former Vice President Joe Biden says he believes he is the most qualified person to be president. He says he'll make a decision in the next 2 months about his potential 2020 prospects, adding Monday night during a stop on his book tour, quote, "No one should run for the job unless they believe that they would be qualified doing the job. I've been doing this my whole adult life, and the issues that are the most consequential relating to the plight of the middle class and our foreign policies are things that I have. Even my critics would acknowledge I may not be right, but I know a great deal about it."
That's Joe Biden talking about folks shouldn't run unless they qualify. I don't think Donald Trump got that memo. But let's see. Let me know, underdogs, who do you think is most likely to be president in 2020? My power rankings, I got Joe Biden number 5. I have Elizabeth Warren number 4, Kamala Harris at number 3. Donald Trump, whether you like it or not, he's the incumbent. He's kind of, you know, got a shot. I got him at number 2. And at number 1, I got the field. Anybody who's not a front runner right now could and likely will be the president of the United States in 2020. Because we never know this far, we don't. You didn't know Donald Trump was going to be president in 2014. You didn't know Barack Obama was going to be president in 2006. You didn't know. And guess what? You can listen to all these people telling you they know. They don't know either. I'm just honest enough to tell you that they don't know and I don't know either. But we'll see. It's fun to talk about. And now it's time for the under the week. And this week, the UN stands for uncertainty. Yeah, uncertainty. Who has some uncertainty in their life right now? Who has some uncertainty as they're about to end 2018? Who has some uncertainty about what is going to happen to them, to their people, to their family, to their jobs in 2019? I can't be the only one who's feeling some uncertainty right now. But let me back up before I go forward here. When I was a kid, I didn't know what special meant. When I was a kid, I didn't know what special for sure felt like. I mean, when I was a little kid, you know, you're just learning the language, right? You don't know certain words yet, what they mean. I was in foster care, so given up for adoption early in my life. I heard as I was a young kid that I had other siblings. So the word special, what it meant, the feeling, all I knew is that I was separated from, given up on, wasn't a part of the biological family that I was born into. And so early, I didn't really know what special meant. And I sure enough didn't necessarily know what it felt like, but I knew it didn't feel like being given up for adoption. And then later in life, let's call it my teen years, you start to learn about things going on outside of your home, your family situation. And I started to learn about this thing called being Black, driving while Black, walking while Black, being Black. And again, at this point, now I'm old enough to, you know, I had a dictionary. I can look up what the word special meant. But now all of a sudden, there was another reason that I felt like I didn't know what special felt like. And not feeling special, at least for me, and I think it's different for you and other folks, brought certain challenges to me. And it made me feel like because I wasn't special, or at least that was my belief at the time, that it meant that I didn't belong in certain places. Because, you know, things that happened to us as little kids, at least for me, I carried it on with me into my teen years, my young adult years, my adult years. And so I didn't believe I believed in belonged in certain places. Like I didn't believe that I belonged in an Ivy League institution, Ivy League university, because I didn't think I was that special. I didn't think my voice should be heard out here in these streets. I didn't think anything that I would have to say to you, to the world, was worth hearing. And so I didn't think that I was special enough to have a nationally syndicated radio show. And, you know, truth be told, I'm a work in progress. As they say, every season has its reason. And this year, a couple things have come to mind to me about being special, not being special, uncertainty, and so forth. And I call it the three P's: persistence, pitching, and patience. Now, why uncertainty? And what does that have to do with being special? Well, I'm in the journey of rediscovering my special stuff. And I think I've shared this before. I was fortunate enough to meet a woman who told me about what's the difference between our purpose and our calling. And one day, it was a person I was in coaching school with to become a certified professional coach. And the woman comes over to me, she goes, "Gregory, do you know the difference between your purpose and your calling?" And my ego wanted to be like, "Yeah, of course I do." And I'm like, "I think I know what those words mean." But in my head, I'm like, "No, not really." So I said to her, in my opinion, humbly, because I actually was like, "No, I don't think I know." I said, "What's the difference between your purpose and your calling? I'm like, I'm curious. I want to know." And she goes, "Your purpose is something that's personal to you. Your calling is something you share with the world." And in that moment, what I realized is that my personal purpose was for me to actually believe that I'm special. And my calling and what I get to share with the world is to help other folks who can relate to that feeling, rediscovering how special they are in the world. And so with that, how's that tied to the three P's? Persistence, pitching, and patience. Well, I got some news. We did unavoidable news about what's going on in the world. Well, you know, we get personal about the news and culture here. So I'm about to share some unavoidable news going on in my world, which is this month, I applied to return back to the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania to complete my degree that I started back in 1993. I was there until 98, didn't finish. And now I feel special enough to go back and complete something that I started over 20 something years ago. Also, I'm not done being persistent in pitching. I pitched the Underdog Stuff show to Google's Podcast Creators Program, where they offer assistance with growing the show, but also financial assistance to help fund it, you know, so that I'm not coming up in here every day, which I enjoy. I do it, love it. But, you know, there's no money involved in this right now. I do it because I believe in it. I do it because I believe in connecting with you guys and gals every week. But the program comes with some assistance, some support. And so I'll find out this month whether or not I'm going to be going back to school in 2019 in Philly, and whether I'll be in a program that helps take Underdog Stuff to the next level. And so I also have to learn some patience, because this week, this month, I have some uncertainty. I don't know where I'm going to be, where I'm going to be living, whether I make it, whether or not. Don't know. And so for all those of you who might be listening right now that have some self-doubt about something about you, I know I've had and still have at times some self-doubt about stuff about me. It's common. It is. But it doesn't have to stop you, because the truth is, we get to be persistent about things that align with our calling and our purpose. We get to keep pitching things, telling our story, applying to school, applying to that, pitching this, pitching that, pitching ourselves. And at the same time, we get to be patient along the way and know that this road comes with some no's. I've been told no a lot. But one thing I know for sure is that the no's never hurt as much as the regret of me not being persistent and pitching and patient. Underdogs out there, what are you going to be persistent and pitching and patient about as we end this year, as we get ready for 2019? I'd love to know. Holler at a brother. At Gregory Neesmith on Twitter, or Gregory Neesmith at GregoryNeesmith.com on email. Go to GregoryNeesmith.com and click on the social media links. Holler at a brother. Let me know what you're going to be pitching, being persistent about, being patient about. And on my end, I'll keep you posted about some of the uncertainty in my life right now. But the good news is I'm being and doing. And in the end, it may not be so much about whether I get accepted into either one of those or both of those programs or situations, but I'm happy to be living my purpose and my calling. Now you're about to find out why yoga is in the title of episode 94. We have special guests, Tressa and Courtney, to stop by to talk about the benefits of yoga and their awesome event called Move and Groove Yoga. As we're going to get to talk jazz, Harlem, and yoga, Tressa is currently agency relation manager with New York City's Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications. Did I get that right?
I actually got a promotion since the last time we spoke.
Well, then I'm glad I got that wrong. Then tell the underdogs out there who Tressa Bolton is, because clearly I got to do better.
No, it's fine. Today, I am senior advisor for the first deputy commissioner of the Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications. So I moved up in the world. Now I'm a senior advisor.
That sounds amazing. Whenever somebody has senior in front of their name, that starts to sound real official.
Thank you, sir.
And we have Courtney, who is a certified yoga instructor doing her thing in New York City, and also the instructor for Move and Groove Yoga.
Yes, indeed.
Did you get a promotion too this week?
I always just feel promoted from within. I'm playing. No, I did not.
It's all good, but it's coming.
It's coming.
I can feel it. With that, let's kick things off. I always love to talk just some underdog stuff in general first before we get into specifically why we're spotlighting you two today. When I say the word underdog to you, what comes to mind?
I always think a champion. I think of that phrase, champion of the underdog. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Okay. We're always, it's more fun to root for somebody who's on the come up versus, you know, the one with all the resources.
Mm-hmm. Hate it or love it, the underdog's on top.
Right.
I love that.
I think for me, underdog for sure, I think about your unsuspecting and unassuming, and what you present probably is not perfect, but it's really a win, you know? So you may be, someone may call you underdog, but you yourself probably thinking, I'm doing everything great. I'm actually number one. So, because you don't assume me to be number one. So I think about that.
True. And you talk about the mindset, right? Yeah. There's a belief that it's all going to work out no matter the circumstances,
no matter what.
Especially when you're on, as Courtney said, on the come up. Now, with that, I'm going to ask a question that I actually know part of the answer to.
Okay.
What were y'all up to yesterday?
We did a little yoga.
You did?
Yeah.
We did a little yoga.
What do you mean? A little yoga where?
Move and Groove, second Saturday at the National Jazz Museum in Harlem. So, we were there. Our musician was Mfergu, and we had an awesome 1 hour class. We even had like a new guest. We had somebody who hadn't practiced yoga.
Yeah, someone very familiar to us.
Who
familiar
who could
to
that
show.
Be?
Familiar to the show.
Special guest and
Special
host.
Special guest.
Yeah.
Gregory Neesmith.
So yeah. Underdogs out there, if the voices of Courtney and Tressa sound familiar, it's because this summer they were here to talk about the Move and Groove event, which has been featured in places like the New York Times, by the way. Yeah. They're now in year two of the event, about to get into year three in 2019. And I said I was going, you know, stop through.
Yep.
And for the first time, I stopped through and I did some yoga yesterday.
Great. Yay.
Everyone, it's harder than I thought.
But it felt good. Mindset. What did you think?
What mindset?
All right. See, I'm supposed to ask the questions. No, but that's a valid question.
Turn the tables.
You are. It was. I see why people do it.
Okay.
Beautiful thing.
I thought about I've heard about the breathing thing, yes, and the balance, which I lost my balance several times yesterday. Mm-hmm. But some of the strength that it takes.
Yeah.
Like I was starting to sweat a little, mm-hmm, and there were some muscles. I'm like, I thought I could do that move, but that, mm-hmm, move's a little harder than I thought.
Yeah.
And one thing I was very mindful of yesterday, there were times when Courtney, when you were leading the yoga yesterday, I noticed that I lost connection with my breath.
Mm.
And so it made me think about times when I'm in stressful moments, yep, and right, all they tell you like to breathe. And it's like, yep, oh, I can see how even yoga could help me like get through moments, mm-hmm, when it's helpful to like breathe.
Yeah.
So those are just some of my thoughts. And also what I love too is that there was some men in the building.
Yay.
Cause I've, yeah, seen stats that say like 8 out of 10, mm, yoga folks are women.
Right.
And it was definitely more than 2 out of the 10, so to speak, or 20, it was more than 20% men in there, which I found is like, oh, I'm also in the right place.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm glad you felt that way. And mm-hmm, I'm so happy to hear that. Cause I like that we create a space that people feel comfortable, mm-hmm, and you can invite. I think men feel a little apprehensive about going to a yoga class sometimes and to walk in a room. Yeah. And this goes for anybody who's not in the what you think of what a yogi looks like. Yeah. To walk in any space and see people who look like you, mm-hmm, is encouraging.
I felt that way. I was like, do I need a pedicure? Do I bring socks? Do I go barefoot? What do I wear? Like tights? Do I wear shorts? It was, you know, it was,
oh, wow,
there was a lot of thought that I went into, mm-hmm, how am I gonna, I'm walking down the street with this big mat thing. It was, mm-hmm, just, it was a whole different experience for me. And I can say now this, and it'll be caught on tape, I will be back.
Yay.
I will be.
Everyone heard that.
Can I ask you a question? So you had all of those thoughts going on before the class. Like, yeah, what happened even when you first sat down on that mat and started with that first breath with Courtney? Like, what were some of the things you were thinking about? What feelings were you having?
I think for me, what ended up happening is I started to relax,
mm-hmm,
because Courtney asked a question about, I think, how many people are like experts or veterans or, right, been there. And it helped me understand that I wasn't the only one who might have, yeah, been a beginner, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I didn't get the sense that anyone cared. I mean, this in a good way,
yeah,
that I didn't get a sense that anyone, absolutely, cared whether I was or was not a beginner.
Exactly.
Right.
They were just like, right, happy to be in the space.
Yeah.
And so I started to relax and I was like, you know what? Cool. And also I heard someone, I think it was Courtney, said that I don't have to do all the moves to, mm-hmm, do what I'm able to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. At my pace.
Right.
And so, yeah, so a lot of those emotions and considerations went away once I got into the room and was able to like lay on the mat. And then eventually I wasn't laying on the mat because Courtney had us doing these moves that
you're flying.
My goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, can you slow down?
You did it. You did it.
I did. I did, actually. And I'm grateful.
That's, and it good, gets easier.
Yeah.
From your lips to the universe, I hope you're right. Now, with that though, I've read some of these stats,
okay,
that say this is something for women. Mm-hmm. This is something, mm-hmm, for people who might be affluent. This is something for people, to use New York City, who live, you know, on the Upper East Side, maybe. Mm-hmm. Mm. How popular is yoga in Harlem?
Very popular.
I think so. I think it's really popular. Yeah, I think there's this perception. And one of the things I've been thinking about lately, I teach at the Harlem Y also. I don't teach in the yoga studio setting.
Yeah.
And I think those things, those statistics you just listed, might apply to, mm-hmm, yoga studios and the people who go to yoga studios.
Right.
But people have been practicing yoga long before that system existed, yeah, nothing against that system,
mm-hmm,
because I practice in a yoga studio, but I think bringing it into other spaces brings it to people who might not get a membership to a, mm-hmm, studio, people who are already in a gym, or just people. I love the National Jazz Museum because, yeah, that is a community, that is a Harlem community, yeah, space.
Yeah, no, that's dope. And I think I saw in the New York Times article, they talked about this growing trend,
yes,
of museums having wellness events, mm-hmm. especially tied to the theme of that museum.
Right.
And it seems like you two have done that and brought jazz and yoga, which I didn't expect to be a combination.
Yeah.
But I love it.
I mean, we were definitely, I mean, I've always told the story how inspired. And I mean, there's just this thing core about where Harlem has this, you know, you have music, arts and culture, and then the people and how that mixture comes together. And there's just this sense, this sensibility around that. And then we found this wonderful thing called a jazz museum that celebrates the culture of jazz music, which I believe is our music and is a foundation of different types of music as well. And then, of course, people who probably are familiar with the jazz museum or had not heard of jazz museum, at least they know that this is an experience that they can be like, oh my God, I've never done this before, but I want to try. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you have this in this space. Wow, this is a museum dedicated to jazz here in Harlem. And, you know, so folks probably if they're walking around, they might see it, or even if they have a local paper, they might have heard of it. But it was like, that was definitely our sense, like supporting and being part of an institution that is here in Harlem.
That's very cool. And for folks who might be on the fence, right? I can talk from experience. I wanted to come,
right.
but I was like, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. For people who might be on the fence listening right now, they're trying to get their New Year's resolution list together.
Right.
They're literally thinking about some things they want to end the year with on wellness and things like that. Why potentially should yoga, and especially yoga where there's people playing jazz, be something they should consider doing?
I think yoga, absolutely. Just go, like you did. You're our best evangelist now. Just go check it out, see what happens. But I think especially yoga and jazz, I like the marriage of those two things. Yoga and these mindfulness practices are about being in the moment and in your that first breath. You're only focusing on what you're doing at that moment. And I think the nature of jazz music and the way you see musicians converse with one another, they're also very present and in the moment. I think, like, talking to Mfergu last night, like, he doesn't practice yoga, but he's like this master yogi to me because the way he's reacting to the things that we're doing. Every musician we've had has been like really present to things that are going on in the room, and I think it makes it a really great fit. I don't know how well it will work with other styles of music, but
it seems like on that level of community, like everyone in that room comes together and, you know, we do our prep and like, okay, so it's going to go, it's kind of like, it's going to arc here, come down here. And then those musicians are used to improvisation and they're like, they're on it.
Yeah. You don't have to tell them much.
You don't have to tell them much. And, it's somehow is such a soothing experience that they're like really in tune. So everyone in this room is concentrated on doing this great thing. And it's really just to relax you. You know what I mean? It really is. It's just for you to have this moment almost by yourself with a whole bunch of people.
You know, you go.
That kind of thing.
That's cool. And speaking of a room with a whole bunch of people.
Yes.
One of the things you always hear is like a question for people. It's like, oh, if you could have dinner with one person in the world or who would it be and things like that. Well, we're talking yoga today.
Okay.
So I have a question for you. You talk about people in the room. If you could have your favorite three people that you would want to have in the studio with you for yoga, who would it be? And it can't be Michelle Obama, since y'all have already done yoga with Michelle Obama. And it can't be me, because I came here today.
So now
that Gregory and Michelle, and I just love the fact that I figured out a way to put Michelle
and Gregory together.
That's awesome. Probably shouldn't happen, but great. But who would be your top three folks that you want to have in the room doing yoga with?
So I thought about this too. Let me see. We can go for Barack. That'd be great.
Okay.
There you go.
Barack, Oprah, and Mary J. Blige.
Okay.
I think she might have a testimony. She might start us off with a melodic meditation. And I'm a fan of hers. I like her spirit. So I want to be in a room with her.
Yeah. She might start singing too. Y'all got
exactly. That's the plan.
I love that list. Okay.
You stole some of mine. So let me see who I come up with on the fly.
Seven.
I have one that wasn't on your list. I always play a song by Gary Bartz, Song of Loving Kindness. He's a tenor saxophonist, and I know that he is also a yogi.
Ooh.
So it's this great meditative song. I would love to have him in class to practice with. Let's see, I'm a Chicagoan, and I'm naming other famous yogis.
Old Kanye or new Kanye?
No, Kanye's not coming. He could use it, but I don't think. Yeah, that might be disruptive. How about Phil Jackson?
Okay, the Zen master.
Yeah, I would like to practice with Phil Jackson, and they need to be in the same class. Ooh. Gary Bartz, Phil Jackson, and I'm gonna go with Marshawn Lynch just as a wild, just like
this.
Yeah, we're gonna all.
That is the most class.
There's no winners and losers in like your top three list, but that was an unexpectedly eclectic.
I love it.
Beast Mode.
Yeah.
Phil Jackson, and who's the other guy?
Gary Bartz.
Man, that's underdogs. Who would be your three for yoga? I don't think you can top that list of six from Courtney and Tressa.
Oh, we need all six in one class.
Put it in the universe.
It's out there now.
It's out there.
Now it's going to happen. I mean, who would have thought that you'd be doing yoga with Michelle at one point, right?
Never.
Yes, indeed. And she's out here selling books and doing tours. Yes,
becoming.
Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. We all get that. I'm going to become someone who does yoga. Like, with that, though. Speaking of manifesting things and putting stuff out in the universe, it's about to be a new year.
Yes.
It's about to be the third year of Move and Groove Yoga. Yeah. What do you want to see happen next for either you or Move and Groove, like inside of this thing that you're creating? I mean, you could be doing anything in the world, and one of the things you choose to spend your time with is bringing this awesome wellness practice to Harlem. What do you want to create in 2019?
2019, something that's always been in my heart. Like, I would love to do international travel with Move and Groove. I would like to be part of jazz festivals that are around the world and this be a part of it, or even music festivals.
That's dope.
Another thing that's on my heart is thinking, even with Essence Music Festival, considering some underdog artists.
Say it again.
Underdog artists. How about they accompany us and have a special quieter event during the Essence Music Festival? Because sometimes I've been many years, it's always busy, 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 busy. But I know there are some people who would just be like, I need a moment to chill in the morning.
Yeah.
And how about some melodies to go with that?
And then I'll interview them.
Yes. And you interview them. There you go.
We'll make it all happen.
And then for myself, I just continue to have a great balance of my professional work and my passionate work, just continue to have a healthy balance that will not stress me out.
I love that. And balance is one of the things that yoga
helps
with,
for sure.
Both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, exactly.
Courtney, what's at least one thing that you want to bring to life related to Move and Groove or personally in 2019?
Oh, I think this is interesting because I was at your workshop a few weeks ago, and we did some exercises talking about what you want to do next. And I kind of put it in the universe. I'm really passionate about bringing new people into the yoga practice and sharing this practice with others who may not traditionally be involved with it. So I had an idea of doing like a beginner's class, yoga from absolute zero. So people aren't intimidated.
Yeah.
So, and then just like a week later, an opportunity to do such a thing came up. So I'm working on some.
Your workshop is.
Hey, shout out to the Underdog Stuff Live Adventures.
Yeah, I wrote it down, and then like this possibility just showed up on my radar. So
that's something. The class?
Yeah.
Oh, but I can't even touch my toes.
That's the name of the class. But oh, I thought, you know, I can't even touch my toes. The girl is silent sometimes. So, but it's the yoga for that person who's asking that question or telling emphatically.
That's just a real reaction when I get. I'm like, you should try yoga. Yeah. Girl, I can't even touch my toes.
Exactly. So there's a class.
I had some moments like that yesterday. just so you know, full disclosure. With that, we are coming up to the end of the show. It's flying by.
Thank you so much.
How can people work with you two with Move and Groove Yoga?
Well, you can check out our website. We're at, you know, the www.moveandgrooveyoga.com. You can reach out to us via email. We're at info@moveandgrooveyoga.com. And Courtney, also, you have your website too, that features your yoga classes.
Oh, CourtneyLiddell.yoga.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Instagram.
We're on Twitter as well. So yeah, we're out here and we're out in these streets in Harlem.
Out here.
We'll run into it. It's exciting to run into folks that have come to our classes and are telling people about classes and giving gift certificates to our class and stuff like that. It's really great. And thank you so much for having us twice.
Oh, come on.
Thank
now.
You. And thank you for coming.
Hey, I will be back. Thank you for coming through the show. Shout out to Courtney and Tressa, who are the curators, the instructors, and the people who make Move and Groove Yoga happen in Harlem. And year 3 is coming. Go check them out. Make it happen. Second Saturday of every month to start off the year. And you want to be there. With that, I want to say thank you to all the underdogs who tuned in today. Shout out to Courtney and Tressa. Also, shout out to Megan and Kayla. They helped produce the show and edit it. With that, I want to end today's show with my favorite quote, which is, underdogs, can't nobody do it like you do it. Nobody. Peace.